Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Our guest today is Jane Edison Stevenson, Vice Chairman of the Board and CEO of Services at Korn Ferry International. She was acknowledged by Business Week as one of the 100 most influential search consultants in the world. So among other things, she has tremendous knowledge of the recruiting industry. But most important of all, she has a tremendous understanding of innovation and the role of leaders in innovation. Jane, with her co-author, Bilal Kafarani, has written a new book, Breaking Away, How Great Leaders Create Innovation That Drives Sustainable Growth, and Why Others Fail. Jane, welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you.
Jane, what are some of the characteristics of leaders capable of building innovation and, most important, sustainable innovation?
The first thing to comment on is that sustainable innovation infers that there's a culture that makes the environment one where innovation can succeed. And there are a couple of things that are important. First of all, innovation cultures will never happen unless the CEO personally embraces accountability for creating an innovation environment. It's not something that can be delegated. You can certainly give pieces of that to other people, but the CEO has to own the accountability for that. Secondly, it is not without risk. So creating an environment of fear of failure will ensure that innovation doesn't thrive. And even if you do get some successes, it certainly won't be sustainable. In general, to build an innovation culture, you need to have courage. You need to be someone who is willing to try things in a responsible way. So there's a balance between risk and reward, but it has to be an environment where discovery and small successes are celebrated. And it needs to be an environment where teamwork is present and people are appreciated for what they do. And then that is built on, as opposed to trying to shape people into a format that maybe they aren't meant to be in. The ability to envision and to connect the dots between consumer insights and the capabilities that the company has is another really important ingredient to leadership. In fact, in our book, we spend quite a bit of time talking about how do you stay present to that? Because today's world is action-packed to a level that is unprecedented with the 24/7 of global time zones and the public nature of the CEO role, which didn't used to be such a public role. There are a lot of things that are important to schedule into your agenda so you stay present to the marketplace, so you stay fresh. One of the CEOs that we interviewed, Fabrizio Frida at Estee Lauder, actually schedules time in his daily agenda that is free thinking time. And he understands that that's really important. And Estee Lauder has been a company that wouldn't survive well without continuing innovation.
All right. Can you describe the role of leadership?
Yes. One of the ingredients of innovation is passion. Getting people excited about what they're doing and feeling like they have a level of ownership in the business and that they can make a difference and that they have an impact is a way to create an environment where people play full out on behalf of the company. So you've got to have an understanding of what the company is up to and then be able to communicate that in such a way that people understand what their part is in the environment. One of the illustrations I like to think of is a beautiful, very complex tapestry. Each of the threads has a special role. And without that thread, you don't have the same outcome. Also, you have to understand what the picture is going to be. If in fact, everybody's just putting their thread in whatever format they would like, it's a mess. If each person understands what their thread is in the tapestry, it's a gorgeous outcome. So it is not just understanding what the company is up to, but understanding what do I do that contributes to that, and not just at the top executive level, but down through the organization. One of the stories that I love to illustrate that is about Roger Enrico. At the time, he was running Frito before he became CEO of Pepsi. Frito was losing to Eagle brand potato chips. And one simple phrase epitomized what needed to happen. He said, "Let's take back the streets." And even when he had moved on to the next role, people still understood what that meant. If you were in supply chain, it meant one thing. If you were in the sales force, it meant another thing. From a marketing standpoint, it meant another. So people understood what color their thread was, but they knew what the tapestry was about. And Eagles Potato Chips went out of business. So I guess they took back the streets.
Exactly. Now, I believe you've identified four different kinds of innovation.
Yes, we have. We interviewed 51 top executives for the research in the book. The first question we asked everyone was, how do you define innovation? We got 50 different definitions of innovation. So we defined innovation as something that's unique, that's of value, and that's worthy of exchange. Generally speaking, in the business world, of course, that would be commercial success. If it's in academia or in government, it could be other forms of exchange like time and labor. If you take that supposition as the overarching definition of what innovation is, then there are four different levels that cascade one from the next. And there are different leadership characteristics and cultures that go with each of these. The first is transformational innovation. Transformational innovation is big time innovation. It changes the way society operates. So if you think about how society changed when the car was invented, that would be an innovation that certainly changed the world. The internet is one. I suspect cloud computing will be a transformational innovation that hasn't taken hold yet. From transformational innovation, it cascades to category innovation. Category innovation takes the fundamental technology that you know what is, but you're looking at new applications for it or new markets to serve. If you look at transformational, it's very high risk because you have no idea what it is, if it works, and who might buy it. If you go to category, you cut out half of the risk because you at least know that it's a technology that works. And then it's a question of how does it break through into new frontiers of technology or new frontiers of the market that's served. And then the third level is marketplace innovations. Something that already exists is remade unique. Brand extensions that completely reinvigorate a brand or things that reshape something that's been relevant to a previous generation, but in a way that's unique to the new generation. Those are marketplace innovations. All three of those are very much customer insight driven and externally focused from a company perspective. Then the fourth one is one that should be in place 24/7 at any company, and that's operational innovation. Here, we're now focusing internally and looking at the way we do things, cheaper, faster, better. So supply chain, financial algorithms, technology from an IT perspective, those kinds of things that might completely change the way things are accomplished inside the company.
Okay, now do different leaders have different innovations of interest to them?
That may be the case. Although it may be that someone doesn't necessarily know what type of innovation they're best suited for. So what we've done is look at not only the personal characteristics of a successful leader for each type of innovation, but also the culture that's imperative for each. If you look at the four categories, transformational is pretty much not going to happen, generally speaking, in a corporate environment. Everything about a corporate environment will squelch and squash transformational innovation. First of all, it needs to be led by someone who can make decisions, and they have to be decisions that are born out of curiosity as opposed to commercial outcome, because you don't even know if it will work yet, let alone if there's a market to serve. The kind of characteristics you look at there are the Albert Einstein or Thomas Edison version. One of the people we talked to who's probably the best example today is Dean Kamen, who invented the Segway and the heart stent and many other completely breakthrough society-changing inventions. He is bored. By the time this becomes market capable, he's on to the next thing because this is someone who's driven by curiosity. He doesn't want to be told what to do. Most people that are transformational innovators need to be in a free environment. They may work from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. They're not going to conform to the normal corporate environment. And the risk is very high. So investment and return on investment are very difficult to quantify. Then we have the category innovator. And here is someone who typically is very affiliative. They look at ideas. They're very conceptual. They love being in an environment where they can take what's there and create a possibility out of it. A.G. Lafley is a great example in our current day. And then in the marketplace innovator, you've got somebody who really understands how to work quickly and make decisions that can bear fruit. This is something that can happen and be developed for your next quarter returns or within a year. Category is a little further out. Transformational could take a long time. So these are the people that you really can depend on. They're very organized. They tend to get people harnessed around an idea. They have tight deliverables and are able to deliver upon them. Also, we found that marketplace innovators sometimes are on the way to being category innovators, and they test out their leadership capabilities on the marketplace level and then find that they like to go a little further afield. They're able to build further out than what you can see. Then operational innovators are people who are tight to detail. They definitely want every I to be dotted, every T to be crossed. They're thinking about efficiency. They're thinking about what is the best way to do what we already know about. They tend not to like ambiguity. So if you think about complete different ends of the spectrum, on the one end, your transformational person doesn't want any confinement. On the other end, you've got your operational innovator, who's a leader who wants to define everything as much as possible, very metric driven. All are exceptionally important to have. We need them all. And so one of the things that is helpful is if you understand your personality characteristics and how that fits into the culture, then you can start to plug people into roles where they're most likely to be succeeding and bringing the outcomes that will be fulfilling for everyone.
So transformational innovation has the biggest risk associated with it.
Far and away, exponentially higher than the others.
And operational ones tend to be those that you have the greatest control over.
Yes, lowest risk.
Now, in the book, you talk about why some innovations fail and what you can learn from them. But what can you learn from successes? Can we actually take those experiences and apply it to the future?
Yes and no. I don't think it's one size fits all. When I was earlier in my leadership career, re-engineering was an extremely popular concept. A couple companies successfully re-engineered with great outcomes, and then everyone was into re-engineering. There wasn't a company around that wasn't looking at re-engineering. It's a phenomenon that didn't work. Peter Drucker has a saying that's really profound, I think, as it relates to this, and that is success obsoletes the behavior that created it. When we get into a metric that says you do this, this, and this, you're certainly in the operational zone, but I think you lose some of that right brain creativity and ability to capture the moment. That is an imperative. So when you look at successes in the marketplace, it is typically taking market insights, marrying them to the technology that you have to work with or could have to work with, given that you could expand it in this way or that way. Then you put that together with great marketing, and the main successes that we look at have those components.
So can you give us some examples?
Absolutely. If you look at Apple, that's a great example of a company that has consistently not just listened to what customers and consumers were saying they wanted, but listening behind that to what could be possible. And if this was possible to create it, would the consumer want it? Looking at the trend, listening deeply to where things might go, and then getting there ahead and being able to provide the viral nature of getting people to want it and to tell other people about it. I think Google's done a great job of that, creating an adoption rate that is much more based on people telling people and people feeling, I've got to work with this or that, whatever the case happens to be. I think that has been a challenge when you've got really major breakthroughs. We were talking to Bill Ford about the hybrid car and some of the new innovations that have been very successful at one level. And then what are the barriers to taking it to the next level? There are issues about energy stations. How do you build that infrastructure so that what people want can actually be developed? We spent time at GE, and they've done some breakthrough work with the hybrid locomotive battery that is great from an energy conservation standpoint. But the weight of the battery has been a real limitation. So if you were to take it from a locomotive and take the technology and adapt it in a category innovation to other areas, how would you manage against that weight? And these are the kinds of things that companies that are focused on innovation and are building out on their capabilities have to keep grappling with. And that's why I'm not sure there's one single algorithm.
Jane, is there anything specific when you fail?
My co-author, Blau, said risk is really innovation's middle name. Risk and failure are pretty tightly aligned. Should you bet the farm on anything? No, I don't think you should. But I think that failure is on the way to success. And if you build an environment where every failure is viewed as a step toward success, that shifts the way people think about it, and it moves people to participate at a different level. One of the great stories of innovation is Thomas Edison creating the light bulb. The associate that was working with him in the lab said, "This is impossible. We've failed 900 times. Thomas Edison said, "No, we've learned over 900 things that don't work. We're about to crack the code." That's a very inspirational way to look at failure.
We've been speaking to Jane Stevenson, co-author of the new book, Breaking Away: How Great Leaders Create Innovation That Drives Sustainable Growth, and Why Others Fail. Jane, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
AMA webcasts bring you 60 minutes of thought-provoking insight, specific answers to your management challenges, and conversations with renowned thought leaders. Best of all, they're all free. For a complete schedule of upcoming webcasts, visit the events calendar at amanet.org/events. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.